Hello, and welcome to Happy Place. This is the show where we forget about the outside world just for a little while and concentrate on some positive reinforcement. I'm Fern Cotton, and today I have the absolute honour of welcoming to your ears the writer and actress Busy Phillips.
My drive to keep going is that I do think that there's a certain benefit to wanting to prove people wrong, wanting the revenge part of it, you know, in those darkest moments. That revenge is not sustainable.
Busy flew over a few weeks ago before the travel bans began, and such is Busy's energy and drive that you'd have no idea she'd just stepped off a 15-hour flight and right into the studio. And what a story she has for us. Get ready for that.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And now, here's the show.
Present for you. I was going to send it to you. That's why I asked for your address. And then I was like, oh, fuck it. I'll just bring it.
Am I opening it now?
I just feel like I thought you would like these. I have a pair, so I...
What are these little things in here?
They're really cute.
They've got little rabbits on them.
Yeah, they're like hoops with rabbits in them.
Oh, my God.
People like freak out when I wear them. And I just feel like you and I have very similar...
We have very similar tastes.
I
adore.
Thank you.
Oh my God, Busy, that's just
of
adorable.
Course. I just wanted to thank you for helping me.
Shut up! Thanks for coming on. Oh my God. So, right, we must talk about this. We're recording, aren't we? So, we've got to talk about this. So we did that very 2020 thing of meeting on Instagram.
But by the way, I've met so many friends online.
Same.
I'm happy.
Some great
to do
friends.
It. Yeah,
great friends. And I you know, was sort of stalking you from afar, going, God, I love all her clothes. And I obviously knew what you followed your acting career from a long time ago, but just loved how you were very honest and I've just connected with that. And then we were DMing. And so your daughter is a huge fan of Dan and Phil.
Huge.
The YouTubers.
Huge.
And you said you wanted to come to the UK and could I help initiate some sort of contact? Mm-hmm. And that has happened.
Yeah, I know.
When's
That's why
happening?
We're here.
When's
tomorrow. Tomorrow afternoon at 2 p.m.
I mean...
My daughter literally just had like a breakdown panic attack because she had put together this little box for them that was really cute. And in it was... Full disclosure, I've watched some of their videos with her, but I don't really know... And I know they're big... stars here, you know, and have had their own shows and all that stuff. But you know how it is. Like, there's a cultural divide. I didn't really know who they were.
I don't watch YouTube. I'm too old.
Right. Exactly. Like, we're definitely not...
We're not in the demographic.
Right. And so anyway, I guess one of them really likes all black stuff. Like,
right.
Okay. And so she had gotten this... She had made me buy this toothbrush and toothpaste in L.A., I think actually it's like Kendall Jenner's brand, but it's called Moon in the States. It's all black. So it's like the black toothbrush and the bristles are black and then the toothpaste is black charcoal. Wow. And so she was like really, and all the packaging is black. So she was really excited. And I guess what happened was we have a nanny who has been with us forever, Ileana, and she's incredible. And our lives wouldn't be able to work the way that they do without her. But Ileana mistakenly thought that was, like, for her to bring on the trip to use. And she took it out of the package and just put it in the suitcase, like, in a plastic bag. And so Birdie just unpacked – my daughter's name is Birdie – just unpacked the stuff and was looking for her gift that she has for the guys and saw that and, like, she just was like sobbing. I know. And I was like, you know what? First of all, it's a great story. Secondly, you haven't used it. It just is not in the packaging.
Yeah, I'll be fine with it.
I know.
They won't mind, but I know it's a huge deal. When, like, she's meeting her heroes.
I know.
She wants it to be perfect.
Did you ever have that when you were a kid?
So I really loved Hanson. Do you remember Hanson?
Of course.
They were my band. I was not very cool. I loved Hanson so much. And if I had ever had the opportunity to meet them, I would have freaked out. I mean, and if I bought a present and then it was tampered with, I would have been heartbroken. I understand Birdie's feelings around this, but it's going to be a very special moment. And I'm so happy for her that she's going to get to have that opportunity.
I know. And also, it's like, I was talking about this with my therapist. But, you know, for my kid, I am like a celebrity, right? Certainly in the United States. And I've been acting since I was 20, and a lot of people know who I am. And then because of Instagram and my popularity, and, you know, as a family, we decided that we would show our kids on Instagram. So as Birdie gets older and like she has more ideas and thoughts and feelings and agency about all of that and social media, and that's what I always wanted her to. I always wanted it to be participatory so that she would feel empowered, because I just saw with some of my friends who had older kids that they would, you know, put the lock down and there was like absolutely none. And then you would find out that they were doing all this stuff secretly.
Yes.
So I just like wanted to try to give her this way to be a part of it and be a part of my life and career and stuff, but have her own say in it. But with that, the caveat being that like she has to put up with like a lot of weird stuff sometimes, like at Disneyland, like people stopping and asking for pictures, or, you know, just when we were checking into the hotel. Like, and so I know it seems like sort of wild that I flew to London with her so that she could meet these guys, but this is, if you have to put up with all that stuff as a kid and sharing one of your parents, like, with the world, essentially, or, like, with their fans, at least then I think she should have some of the benefits.
Get the perks in. This is going to be something she will never, ever forget.
Well, no, this is, like, wild. I'm already thinking, like, my poor second child will be in therapy when she's 25, and she'll be like, my mother took my sister to me. I never met anyone.
No, you're going to have to do this next year with your other child.
I know.
Somewhere even more amazing and fabulous.
Well, actually, my husband took Cricket to New York this weekend for, like, trip.
Oh, fine.
Yeah, they're
That's
fine.
Even.
Yeah, it's even. That's what I think.
It's absolutely even.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you've made that happen and that she's going to have this trip, and you're going to have this whirlwind weekend. I love your Instagram for many reasons. As I've said, I love the honesty, and you can just see that you are being you. And I think that is still weirdly rare in social media land.
Yeah.
And certainly with people in the public eye, there is so much that's still concealed. And you've been very honest with how you talk about therapy. And then also just the more fun stuff. Like, I love watching your workouts. I'm so intrigued by the leg lift thing. I've never seen that.
So many leg lifts.
The leg lift thing is so fantastic. I've been sort of trying to mimic it at home in my own workouts. Like, what is that? What is the angle?
Well,
what is the leg lift?
She comes up with the craziest things.
It's great.
This trainer. I love her.
Yeah. And I love that you're willing to share all aspects of your life, the good, the bad, and the ugly, like we all have in life. Have you always been that way inclined, that you want to be honest with people in your life and just be you and say as it is?
No, I don't think so necessarily. I mean, yes and no. Yeah, yes and no. I've always sort of fundamentally been this person. And I, in high school, was, you know, somewhat of, like, I was always like, I was very righteous in my beliefs and very loud about it. And I grew up in a really conservative place. Arizona is a very conservative state in the States. And I feel like I got into, like, a lot of fights about things, like even back in the, you know, I just turned 40, you know, in the 90s, like gay rights, you know, I was like always screaming at my classmates about that. Actually, this guy came up to me at my 20-year high school reunion, and he brought up some fight that I guess we had gotten into in government class when I was saying in like 1996 that marriage, like gay marriage, should be legal. Like, you should be able to marry whoever you want. This kid and I apparently got into some huge fight about it. And, you know, he was like, I just wanted to say, like, I grew up in a really Republican family, and I was, you know, just a part of that household. And I'm gay now. Like, wow. I came out when I was in my late, it took me until I was in my late 20s to come out. But I thought about that fight so much over the years. And I was like, oh, really? I don't even remember it.
Funny.
But,
no recall.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it didn't even occur to me.
Yeah. It was a seminal moment for him.
For that guy. Yeah. 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 Wow. Bless him that he, like, was able to overcome his upbringing and be who he wanted to be.
There was one Instagram post that you did recently where I thought it was so refreshing. You said, you know, you kind of talked about the fact that you don't really act these days, or you choose not to. But if you do, the circumstances have to be absolutely perfect. Conditions must be perfect. And it's so refreshing because it is still like the dream or the perceived dream that, you know, acting is the holy grail and that it's this wonderful world. And then you can negate, you know, all bad stuff in life because you are a shiny actor in actor land.
Right.
And you kind of are saying, well, no, this has to be right to fit into my lovely life that is just the normal bit of where I'm at. How did you come to that conclusion?
Well, I think several ways I came to that conclusion. Number one, I think I have a perspective on my kids, which is that they're only little for a very finite, like, it's so short, you know? You already feel that, right? Like, when you turn around and they're all of a sudden, like, they don't need you to walk them into kindergarten, or that, you know,
they
won't kiss you in public. Or, you know, the first time my daughter, like, literally looked at me and she was like, I hate you.
Oh, no, I can't hear that. It's
and
too traumatic. You know,
it happens so fast.
Oh, I've had
and
it.
So the idea that I would spend half of my year away from them working in another city and coming home on weekends is just an undue stress to put on their childhood, which is already in so many ways, because I work in this industry, stressful for them, you know? And like, kids need structure and they need to know certain things are constant and in order to feel secure. And I just felt like, you know, Birdie was a kid who already had anxiety about stuff and was already, a lot of kids now do, you know? And I just wanted to mitigate that with the work piece and just say, well, I'm not going to leave unless you all can come with me. It's the summertime, or, you know, it's a really quick trip. I mean, I fly to New York a lot for work now, but just for, you know, a day. And I'll make it, like, I kill myself. I mean, I was talking about this with my husband. Like, I kill myself. Like, I'm flying from here to New York. I have to work on GMA Wednesday morning. So I'll have to wake up at, like, 5 a.m. or whatever in New York, do GMA, and then I'm flying right. And then I have to do a day of press. And then I'm taking the late flight back to L.A. And then I'm the mom, volunteer mom on the field trip for my daughter on Thursday to the science museum, you know, in Los Angeles.
You're trying to do it. Oh, I relate.
It's like, it's crazy. Oh my God, this book I just started reading. You have to get it. I wonder if it's out here yet. It's called Why We Don't Sleep at Night.
Oh God, I really need that.
Me and producer
Matt just had a half an hour talk about sleep deprivation and insomnia. Anything to do with sleep.
It's crazy. Well, I have just Why We Can't Sleep, Women's New Midlife Crisis by Ada Calhoun.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
That's the book for me.
Yeah. It's crazy. Because I think that our generation, too, like, we're both young Gen Xs, but I relate more to Gen X than I do millennials.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're just that caught generation of being expected by our parents' generation to do better than they did. And as women, like, they're like, well, we cleared the way. Like, the world is your oyster. You have to do it. Mm. Except, like, society and culturally, it didn't really shift. So gender roles in the home were still exactly the same. So you're like, wait, I'm working 14 hours a day and I'm making all of this money and still putting the kids to bed at night and still doing all of the labor, domestic labor in the home. And like, where's my nanny?
Two things coincided for women in our age bracket and probably a little bit above and definitely below, where, yes, we've got these new opportunities where and rightly so, that we can go and do whatever career we might want to do, or, you know, be the CEO of a company, or go and try anything. But weirdly, at the same time, on the other sort of side of the parallel, there's this pressure that parents, especially mums, now have to do everything with their children,
everything,
which my parents did not play with me ever.
No.
I'm not saying that in a judgmental, awful way. Like, it just wasn't the done thing. They never sat and went, should we play Barbies? Whereas there I am with Sylvalian families going down slides and, you know, doing finger painting or whatever and enjoying it. But also, I'm stretched.
Yeah.
And it's so weird that those two things happened at the same time.
Yeah.
And we're trying to navigate that. We're the first generation really going, right, so I can be the boss, but I'm also the really, you know, engaged mum who's on the school trip as well.
It feels like there's no way to avoid feeling bad.
You can't.
Like, that's
whatever you do, you feel guilty.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of that has to do with, like, the pressure and expectation that was put on us by, like, the previous generation, and especially as women, just that they wanted us to do all of the things that they didn't feel were available to them. And we wanted that too. We believed, like, that's right. Yeah, we should be the COOs.
Yeah.
We should be the heads of companies. We should be making these moves and making these decisions. But then also, we know that we want to do a little bit different in terms of parenting, because what, like, that kind of parenting maybe didn't work for a lot of us. And maybe we've talked about it in therapy for 10 years or 15 years or whatever. You know, so, yeah, so I think it's, like, I think we're just in a really tricky spot.
But I like that you talk about that publicly, because I think people, again, will have that, there's that discord where people go, oh, well, if you're a big actor or whatever, that's all sorted and taken care of.
Right.
There's you on an emotional level saying no. Like, on a practical level, you know, yes, maybe you do want to have a nanny or some other help or whatever, and that's wonderful and a privilege. But on an emotional level, that is still a very hard thing to try and deal with.
And that, like, you know, hashtag first world problems. It's like, yeah, no kidding. Obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
We're all aware. Yeah. Like, I'm aware that the world is burning. Like, I'm aware of all of the other stuff. And then there's, like, the micro issues of how we get through the day and our own mental health and how overwhelmed we feel and what support we have. You know, I think it's important. That is, to me, where, like, social media is wonderful for many reasons. One of them is making friends. And, you know, and another is that we're able to sort of just feel less alone when we're really able to connect and share with people.
Yeah, it's important. It's really important.
I think so, too.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Your book was just sublime. I read it so quickly.
You're so nice.
No, it's brilliant, because, again, it is honest. This book is true. I wonder how you felt sitting down, making that decision that you were going to write a book that, you know, you're telling your story, and rightly so, but you're not hiding bits of it or masking parts. For you, it felt really right to just say what you'd experienced. How was that?
I mean, it was a choice that came at a time where I sort of had kind of zero fucks left to give.
Yeah.
Can I say that? Like, you know, I just was like, the election, Donald Trump had won. I was like, what is this world? This world that I live in, this country, they actually don't value my experience at all. Like, my experience means nothing to them. And I wanted to just wanted to be done with it. I just wanted it all out there. I wanted to not hold on to these things anymore that I had, like, allowed myself to feel shame or have kept secret for so long. And I was excited about the opportunity to be able to do it in a book, as opposed to, you know, like, I think that there is a thing, I mean, even though, like, I basically started a viral hashtag moment thing with my abortion in the US last year, talking about it because of the extreme abortion bills. But I think there does tend to be this this thing where people feel pressured to, like, how do you explain your trauma in 140 characters or less?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm like, I can't do that. Like, I don't know how to, I need more than that. I need to explain the complexity of my feelings about all of these things and how I got through it. And then in terms of Hollywood, and oh, this kind of goes back to your question of how I made the decision that conditions must be perfect. You know, the business is the business, and it's always been, you know, incredibly misogynistic and not friendly toward women and people of color. And the entertainment industry has, like, a long, long way to go still, you know? So in terms of, like, some of the names that I, like, you know, I just use the names of the people
James Franco.
The stories. I mean, you know, Franco's, like, honestly, like, the craziest thing is I know he had his own, like, Me Too stuff, accusations in the United States when that was happening, but I didn't have that experience with him. He was just a dick to me, but
yeah,
and horrible. But he's apologized as an adult, and really apologized. And, like, my husband sees him at spin class sometimes.
So really?
Like, yeah, it's like fine.
That is brilliant.
So LA. So LA. They just, like, they run into each other at spin class. Hey, dude, so busy as a night. Yeah. Oh, so I have, like, I have no issues with, I mean, he and I don't have any issues. He has whatever, you know, his journey is his own.
But that's what's so good about the book is you flip between these moments that are still brutally honest and saying it as it is, you know, James Franco being mean on set and being a bit of a douchebag, to things that are, you know, I'm sure took a lot of thought and care on your part, thinking about, well, do I want to write about this and how do I write about it?
Right.
The pregnancy that you just mentioned.
Yeah.
How old were you at the time
15.
Again? So you were young, you were 15. And at this point, correct me if I'm wrong, but you wrote something in the book, like, at this point, you thought that for women, sex just happened to you.
Yes.
That was how you'd kind of grown up. I think a lot of us did in that era. It wasn't talked about as much.
No.
There wasn't any information that was reachable at that
age. I didn't even tell my mom I got my period.
Yeah. It was a funny, suppressed time to talk about sex. And I think many of us ended up really unsure. And for you, that meant a boyfriend who really didn't kind of give any concern as to how this would affect you.
Right.
And you ended up pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And your mum seemed to be incredibly supportive.
She was, yeah.
Whereas his mum, not at all.
No.
And that was a very tricky situation for you to deal with. And that ended up with you, well, instinctively, I'm sure, thinking, I'm too young.
Yeah.
This, for me, is abortion.
Right.
How did that inform how you then thought about relationships and sex afterwards?
I mean, it's all been tricky. I think, again, for our generation, I think because of all the things you said, I think we came of age, you know, when, like, the AIDS crisis was still at its height. Like, I was always just positive I was going to contract HIV, like, positive. My whole, you know, I was really scared of that. And I feel like I had a lot of therapy to go through in my 20s to get through a lot of it.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it just was, there was a lot to unpack there. My early sexual experiences were traumatic and in their own ways. And I had to kind of just get, I had to get over it and I had to, like, move past it. And it still is a thing for me sometimes, you know? All I wish for my daughters and for their friends and my friends' sons is for all of them to be, and I think they are, like, growing up in this different time where, like, discussions about consent and about sexuality and about, you know, all the different ways you can express yourself and be as a person and what pleasure is and what feels good to you is different than what feels good to someone else. And it's, you know, it's just, those are the things that totally we were not involved in those conversations.
Yeah, I know. And I might be making a wild assumption, but reading the book, I really related to the dynamic that you had with your boyfriends early on when you were a teenager. And I think for me that went on into my 20s, that I always felt lesser than. They were probably right and I was kind of lucky to be with them.
Right.
And it only dawned on me later down the line, probably my late 20s, before I met my husband, that I deserved a little bit more than that dynamic being so imbalanced. Would you say that was the case for you?
I think I was just always, Yeah, I was always searching for someone to just, like, adore me.
Yeah.
You know? And I would pick people who took advantage of that.
Mm. Yeah, same.
And exploited that.
And yeah.
were not interested, really, in what I was or what I was or who I was. Mm. And, yeah, because, like, even my boyfriend when I was in my early 20s, the one who, like, told me I laughed too loud and, you know, would always, like, oh, just, do you have to have everybody looking at you? Why are you, what, is that funny? I was like, that's just the way I laugh. Mm. You know, I, oh, but you're right. You're right. That my laugh is stupid. You know, and then that your internal thing starts spinning.
I had
out.
One of those. I had one that wouldn't let me open his car door because I wore too many rings. And right. It might scratch paintwork.
Right. You might scratch it. I mean, that's
that was an interesting one.
It's insane what we put up with.
I know.
And, like, for what?
For what? And I wouldn't now. I'd be like, fuck you. I'm opening your car door with 1,000 rings on. I don't care. It's bizarre. But again, I love that you were willing to go there and say, you know, this is what I've been through. Mm-hmm. And I wonder what the reaction has been like and if it's as you had imagined. You know, were you nervous as to what the reaction might be to the book and how your stories would be perceived?
Yeah, I mean, I was really nervous and stressed out just because I'd never written a book before. I really wanted it to be considered more than just some celebrity's memoir.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted it to be relatable to everyone. You know, I wanted women that I didn't know to see themselves and recognize things. And also I was wary of it of really seminal, important moments in my life being turned into clickbait.
Yes.
And,
it's a huge worry.
Yeah.
In any interview even that you
yeah.
give, that's going to become something.
I almost always think of it, like just now when we were doing this, I was like, oh, the Daily Mail is going to put James Franco and Busy Phillips' husband go to spin class together.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I just already know what
I
it
know.
Is.
I know.
And because I'm really, like, I think as a poet, I think that that's, I actually have been thinking a lot about this, and I think that that's one of the things that separates, like, people when they talk about Instagrams of celebrities or public figures that are relatable and not. I think self-awareness is such a huge piece of it. And I think that the ones that sort of feel like there's a distance between are the people who are not very self-aware and aware of the world that they're operating in. And I feel like I've always been incredibly aware of the world around me and aware of my own participation in it.
Mm.
And so, yeah, so the clickbait thing was like my biggest concern, actually.
Yeah, I bet. I bet it was.
And then I wasn't concerned. You know, there's lawyers and you change identifying characteristics and things of the people from high school. And so I wasn't concerned really about that because also everything that I was saying was true. So, you know, come at me.
Busy, could you tell me the story about your school trip to Europe?
That was one of the hardest things for me to share. It was a story that, like, I mean, it was a part of the story that, like, a lot of close friends of mine as an adult, I never had told because, well, because it was just so sort of sacred to me. I mean, like, no pun intended. But it was just, I don't know. Like, it was just, it felt so special. And so I had talked, my husband and I had talked about my reticence to even put that ending in the book. But when I wrote the chapter and the way that I don't know how you write, but like the way I write is like fits and starts. Like I'm either all on or I'm just on Instagram and Twitter like for 12 hours.
I snack,
you know?
A lot when I'm writing. There's snacking, there's writing.
Yeah.
There's more snacking, there's writing. It's
yeah.
not thorough.
Yeah. And I'm not one of those people that like subscribe to the belief that I would just have to sit down and just write.
Yeah.
I had to, like, it had to move me, you know? But when it did, sometimes I would just go and write,
yeah.
you know, a whole 40 pages or whatever, a whole chapter. And that was how the story where I got pregnant when I was 15 and ended up having the abortion and then, and basically, so, you know, I come from a Catholic family. We're all, both sides, double Catholic.
Mm.
And I was really into it when I was a little girl. I wanted to be an altar boy. I was very dismayed when I was told I couldn't be because I was not a boy. My first feeling of gender inequity.
Yeah, exactly.
But I really did, you know, and my grandmother, we were just like a lot of Catholics, you know?
Yeah.
And Catholics are, you know, like it's a very specific thing and guilt and family unit and feelings about abortion. I mean, and historically speaking, Catholics were always the ones that were anti-abortion. I mean, truly, you can look in the history of the American anti-abortion movement and the evangelicals that got involved and Jerry Falwell, and really it had nothing to do with abortion. They always thought that was like a Catholic thing. Like the Christians... I just read this article, which is why I know all this information. But the evangelical Christians were sort of like, we don't really care. They didn't. And then it became, they saw an opportunity, like a political opportunity. And so then they glommed onto it in like mid-70s and then in the 80s, which is wild. Like when you think about that, but people are really, anyway. So, but Catholics, wow. So my mother was incredibly supportive, even though I think that meant for her that she had to put aside, you know, her own Catholic schooling since she was in kindergarten and maybe even her own beliefs. Like, we never fully talked about that part of it. But she just was determined that my life was not going to be derailed by one horrible kid. And not the kid in, not the one that I was pregnant with. not the fetus.
No.
The boy that got me
knocked
out.
The boy.
Yeah. And like having your entire life tied to that person. And I didn't want to be 15 and I just didn't want to have the baby. So. I had the abortion. My father had a really hard time with it. He basically like kind of couldn't speak to me, like couldn't really look at me for months and months and months. I had emotionally it was like a wreck, and I felt like just, and the boyfriend's mother also was religious and sat me down and told me I was going to hell and that I had corrupted her son and that.
Which for a 15-year-old is a lot to take on from someone.
It was a lot, because even in that moment where, you know, I was always the girl that I am and I was like, well, fuck you, you know, in my head, I went home and like sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. Like I felt that thing deeply. And I felt like in my core that could be true. I could be going to hell. Maybe it is. Maybe I'm wrong. Like maybe life begins at conception. What if I'm wrong? Fuck. You know, like I went through all of that stuff. And so the summer was coming, and that was also when I was due. I was due in June, and my French class, my teacher had this like extracurricular tour of Europe, like 3-week student travel thing, you know, and they needed like 12 kids to sign up or something to do it. And so my two friends and I convinced our parents to let us do this European trip. And I think my parents were just like, just get her out of the house. Like, just go cry somewhere else, cry in another country. And so we flew to Europe. We traveled around. And it was like so insane. The tour guide was like, you know, this is called the ABC tour, another bloody cathedral. Because every country, every city we went to, it was just like, going to the cathedral.
We're just
going to the church, and here's the church. And in every church, I would go and I would light a candle and I would like sob. And my sweet friend Kate, who still is like one of my, I'm going to cry because just thinking about how sweet she was to me. She would just go, and like, even though everybody else was like off eating like Bavarian pretzels or whatever, she would just like sit and wait for me to be done and then like take my hand and like go buy postcards. And, you know, she was so sweet. And we went to the Vatican, obviously, when we went to Rome. And the day we got there, there was extra security. And it's such an insane story. And, I almost got rejected because I was wearing these cream overalls that I had borrowed from my friend Emily.
Yeah, no overalls. We call them dungarees over here. No dungarees allowed in the Vatican.
Well, no one told 15-year-old me.
Yeah.
And I was like, but these are nice.
Yeah, these are really cool dungarees.
Yeah, and our tour guide talked to the guard, and the guard basically said if she can get, like, a pullover, then we'll let her in. And so I got someone gave me a sweater from the tour. I think it was one of the old people on the tour, because they accidentally, this student travel group, accidentally booked two high schools and then, like, a senior citizen and alumni association from a college on the same tour bus.
That's adorable.
It was kind of wild. Yeah, it was wild. So, yeah, it was a crazy trip. So, and then I went in, and it happened, the Pope John Paul happened to be there that day, and he was giving some sort of speech, and I was like, couldn't believe it. I was like more excited about just like, how crazy is this? You get to see the Pope. It was packed. I grabbed Kate. We ran around to the sort of like right wing of the church, and we were just pushing and pushing. And then at a certain point I lost her, and I had my little disposable camera. I wanted to get a picture for my grandma. And so I just kept pushing up. And then there was just this confluence of circumstances in which, like, I got shoved really hard from behind. Someone stepped out of the way. A woman was like, you need this more than me. Like, it was like the craziest thing. And I sort of like flew forward and almost fell down. And the security guard caught me and pulled me up. And when he did, I was face to face with Pope John Paul.
I get goosebumps you saying it. And I've already read the story.
It was really weird. It was really crazy. And he said, as Deutsches, I had my hair in braids, in blonde. I had my hair in two braids. And I said, no, no. And he was like, oh, American, American. And then he like took my cheeks in his hands. And he like said something like very, you know, like a prayer or something. And then, like, looked at me and then, like, walked away. And that was it. And I was the only person that he, like, stopped and talked to or did anything or whatever, touched. And then all of these, like, Italian women and people, everybody descended on me and were kissing my forehead and pulling my hair. And
it's insane.
It was crazy. And I, okay, now I'm really going to cry. And so then I went back and I was like, oh, I have to call my parents and tell my parents. And I was like, what's the date? What day is it? Because, you know, we've been on this, like, tour for over 2 weeks or something at this point. And it was my due date. It was date that they had given me when I went to Planned Parenthood. Like, it could not have been clearer it was insane.
But you know what? We just need more stories like that.
That was crazy.
Because stuff like that can happen. And it was for me like the best moment of your book, because you've been so honest and this beautiful stuff. But then it's like, as well as you bearing your soul and saying, you know, I've been to these dark places and this has happened, also to go, but then these miraculous, beautiful things can align.
Yeah.
It is possible. And we don't hear these stories. We hear the news and it's doom and gloom and we look on our phones and it's terrifying and everything is fear-mongering. But there are these beautiful stories out there. And the way that you told the story just then, but also in the book, it's so moving.
It's better in the book, guys. Read the book.
It's so good in the book. I was crying my eyes. Oh, and my husband was like, what is wrong with you? I was like, it's a really emotional bit of the book.
I also think just that chapter is very long because I really wanted to go into all of it and what I was feeling and what that year was for me and like coming off the year before it, and just it was just so important to me that you had like a full scope of where I was at in order to understand like the magic of the ending of that part.
Well, you want to invest in what you'd been through, right? and the people around you and how that had affected you, and you did that so perfectly, and it was just the best moment. I loved it. It was so beautiful. Okay, a couple of things that I will quickly ask you is, okay, what is really important on this page?
This is so nice. Thank you for having me.
I wish we could sit here for years. It's too quick. I don't like how quick it is.
I don't know when I'm supposed to eat again. I don't know what's happening.
No, don't worry about that. You're in a limbo time zone. We must not worry about that. Okay, so one thing I think that would really help a lot of people that I certainly always like to try and get from when I'm talking to people or reading books or listening to other podcasts is... when you've been knocked and when you've had stuff happen to you, like there's another story, we don't have time for it. You've got to read the book, you've got to get the book, The Blades of Glory story,
which
was so angry about.
I know, me too, still.
I was so, and I'm going to just leave you with that, listeners, because you have to read it. I was so angry because of the injustice that you dealt with there. When you've been knocked in any of the ways that you talk about in your book, emotionally, professionally, whatever, how do you or how have you picked yourself back up again to be where you're at now, which is, you know, a mum still putting yourself out there in a vulnerable way, in an honest way, and saying no to things and saying the conditions need to be correct. How have you got to that place of confidence?
Yeah, I mean, that was hard. That one in particular was a really hard one to recover from because it was personal and professional.
Yes.
And that's the worst. That's the worst. When you deal with someone that you, like, when it's a friend, it's terrible. Yeah. When it's someone you love and have spent years with, it's like it was untenable. It was truly devastating, and it took me a long time to get over it. Really, really a long time. And I think that my resilience or my like drive to keep going is that I do think that there's a certain, I don't know, benefit to wanting to prove people wrong, like wanting the revenge part of it, you know, in those darkest moments. That revenge is not sustainable. Like, you can't, that can't always be your driving
force. I guess it's an impetus for you to then find the reason.
Exactly. Because I think that a lot of times, because if that is your only motivation, it won't work.
Yeah.
It'll be false. But if it's the thing that in the days when you're on the kitchen floor and you literally can't get up, the thing that gets you up off the kitchen floor is like, well, I'm going to fucking show them.
Yeah.
Then let it be that.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm fine with that.
Yeah. And then you'll find the sparkle like come from somewhere else, hopefully, you know?
I think that's very practical and sensible advice, because usually we are told, you know, don't feel revenge or anger. I get really angry about stuff. And sometimes it's a driving force that actually allows me to do some good.
Yeah.
So I think it's really great advice to do that.
Yeah. And I think that the flip side is too, like, you can't live your whole life wanting to have revenge or prove people wrong, because that it really will not. People smell it on you, and it's like not a good look.
It's
like,
not healthy,
they don't
for
like
you
it.
Either.
Yeah, it's not healthy.
Not nice for your insides to have that. Yeah. Constantly that toxicity floating around. But I think, like you say, if it's a push in the right direction,
I'm not opposed to it. Yeah. I'll still always let that like be a little bit of the fire sometimes. You know,
nothing wrong with a bit of fire.
Yes. And I think, like, as women, we're taught to not, I don't know, to like shy away from that, and that's not a quality that's desirable or something for a woman
to
have.
Cares?
I don't care. I mean, it hasn't done us any. Listen, by the way, the old rules did not service us
exactly
in most industries.
Yeah.
So let's make new ones.
Here. Busy, I really hope that this is the start of us continuing to chat and to hopefully meet again at some point.
You come to LA ever?
Well, I used to kind of half live out there.
Wait, what show did you do? My husband was like, I used to watch her on something.
I did an NBC show called Last Comic Standing.
That's right. No, we used to, when Mark and I started dating, we watched you.
What?
Yes. How many years ago was that? That was a long time ago.
10 years.
Yeah.
In my head, nobody saw it.
Maybe
it just happened.
Well.
How funny.
Yeah, we watched it. So, okay, maybe we hadn't just started dating. We had just had Birdie. So that also tracks.
How funny.
Yes, we would watch that show all the time because he's like, I know Fern Cotton.
She's bizarre to me.
He has the best memory for stuff like that. Like, he can place actors and performers.
Wow.
He's always right. But
wow.
Yeah, I loved Last Comic Standing.
It was fun.
What year, was fun. Years were you on it? Who won?
Eliza
Schlesinger.
Eliza won it. She was great.
She's amazing.
And I'm still in contact with a couple of the comedians. I mean, it was such an amazing time. And I was doing I did another NBC show out there, and I was like, do I stay out here and try and make this? But I am a homebody, essentially. So I just thought, I need to be back in the UK and be in my base. But it was wonderful, and I absolutely loved it. But yeah, that's another lifetime ago. I mean, how weird. But we will come back out. We will, and we will meet up, and I will see you.
You have to, like, the kids have to be, that jet lag is no joke, going from this.
It's hell.
Going from here there is it's a hell. Bummer.
We did it once when my eldest Rex was about, 10 weeks old. My father-in-law was touring the States, and we did a bit of the California leg of the tour, and I was just sort of drunk with tiredness for 3 weeks and then went home. But it was still worth it, so I know I need to do it again.
Yeah, it's fun.
Busy, thank yes. you so much. We will see each other again.
Yes.
And thank you so much
thank
for your time.
You. Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you for everything.
Oh, thank you, Busy. What an amazing force of nature she is. I really hope that I get to see her again soon. We've kind of become pen pals on Instagram direct message now, and I would love to bump into her again, or at least continue this brilliant conversation we've started. If you enjoyed that chat, you should check out my interview with Jonathan Van Ness. Find that when you subscribe for free on your podcast app of choice. And to find out who's on next week's show, find us on Instagram at Happy Place Official. Thanks again to Busy, to the producer Matt Hill at Rethink Audio, and to you lot for listening. Really appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed it. Stay safe. I'll see you soon.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.